accession number 27060, reel 8.
So what was to happen next? You've got this situation, the reality of the situation happening around you.
Yeah.
What was to unfold?
Well, with me personally, I can't tell you what happened to the rest of them. After a bit, I think it was the third day or fourth day.
How long did the drop last?
I was in three phases. Actually, with us it lasted, the planes were going over nearly all day, you know, that's the point. Whether they, in our area, it didn't last very long at all. But, of course, there were three or four different sections where they dropped that we didn't know, we had no contact with. And but they seems to me that talking to other people that they shared about the same fate in everywhere where they were dropped, you know, because the powers that be were prepared well for where they thought that they would try to attack, except for the land, for the seaborne thing. Well, they couldn't do much about that because the British Navy was gone and we had no aircraft and they sort of just done what they wanted, just landed and that was it, yeah.
The landing's taken place. Describe what was to happen following the landing. The Germans are on the ground in whatever form they've come. They're consolidating their position, or not, as the case may be.
Well, they try to form a front. That was apparently what the idea was, to link up with their people on the other higher ground, but they couldn't do that. So they sort of dug in on sides of hills and that sort of thing, but our fellas were cleaning them up as quick as they, you know, with... they had no real protection, except one group got around into a... around a bluff, and there was quite a few of them there, and they decided not to worry about them, to leave them there, because they weren't doing any harm, so they just left them there, and they nearly starved them out, you know, they weren't getting any supplies until right at the last day, I think it was, they found out that they were there, they got the signals to their aircraft, and they supplied them from then on, but... everybody, until those people come in by sea, they had the, especially the infantry, they had the whole thing, I reckon, sewn up. But everybody's supplies of everything and food and everything were running short. And when these people come with armoured fighting vehicles and light tanks and all, it was a lost cause, you know.
People talk of the numerical outnumbering of the defence personnel.
That's
to
right.
The invaders.
Yeah.
And it was literally just a matter of time. Once they'd taken an airfield, they could fly things in.
Oh, that's right. And that was the principle of the whole thing, is to the three airfields had to be held, you know, but in our situation, it was only a matter of time before they got one. But the mere fact that I think the whole crux of the matter was when they landed unopposed on... and start bringing in armoured fighting vehicles and artillery to the extent that they did, it was all over and done with. But me personally, I got sent on a mission, I think I told you, to find out whether this ASC captain had a group of people and what his circumstances were as far as ammo and rifles and that were concerned. And on my way down, I got fired on, and geez, it just missed me too. It chipped the rock off above my head, and I let a couple of rounds go back to where I reckoned it come from, and it took me a lot longer to get down to where I was going than what was anticipated. And when by the time I got back, they'd gone. except for this one fella out of the ASC. He said, I thought you might have. He said, I waited for you. Anyway, the two of us, we instead of going along the road, we took off up through the mountains, and we must have gone in about 15 or 16 miles up hill and down dale until we finally caught up with the people that I was with initially, you know. And then we just went down and waited until the until we called in to go, called on to go get on the barge. I think that was about the 28th or 29th. Not sure.
What was the feeling like to know that that surrender was
bloody dreadful? I can tell you, bloody dreadful. I've never seen so many people let down in the whole of my life. You know, they could not believe that what was happening, you know. A lot of them wanted to fight on, you know. They had to be told to, not a few of them, lots and lots of them wanted to fight on. They had to be told that it was surrender time, you know, because they could see how well they were, but they didn't know that this other land-based people were on the job then, you know. But as far as the paratroopers was concerned, they weren't a bit concerned. They had that in their keeping, yeah. And
were you helped at all by civilians at this time, crossing the mountains?
Didn't have a great deal of contact with them. You know, they gave us, water was very, very short. I saw people get the moss out of the bottom of horse troughs that had probably been there for 1,000 years and chew the moss out of it. And another thing too, we about halfway across Crete, it was very fertile area, and there's this big well. It was an enormous well. It would have been 30, 40 feet across. And one of the, when I came along there, one of the troops had fallen in, and they all had their water bottles on strings and bits of belting and everything, and they wouldn't let him out until he filled their water bottles, you know. And then they all got all their stuff together and combined enough to pull him out, you know. But water was in, it was bloody. You can do without tucker, but you can't do without that water.
Mm. What was it? How long did your little trip take?
Oh, it only took me to go across about 2 days. That was hiding, and I wouldn't have been. It was only 37 mile or something. But
had they been given an option? Okay, well, if you want to, you can surrender, but if you want to take to the hills, you can.
No, but I mean, I think most people, the ones that actually surrendered at that time as a group, were in a controlled surrender situation, you know. There were hundreds of people that took off across the hills, hundreds of them, and they were still there, you know, in pockets. The Germans had to come and get them months after, weeks and months after, they were still rounding people up. Some of the little stories you read in these unofficial history, some of our fellas sitting in a little estaminet way up in the muddy hills, and this German officer come in with four or five troops, and they sat down and ordered coffee, and he got up and came over to the officer out of our unit who spoke German, and he was talking about artillery and skiing in Switzerland and all this sort of thing. And in the finish, he suddenly woke up that he was talking to the enemy, you know. So he was very good. He said, he told his sidekick, his lieutenant, he said, you stay in there armed, and he said, finish your coffee and that, and he said, because from here on in you won't be getting too much of that sort of thing, you know. So he was quite, he knew that they couldn't escape from that situation, so he was quite nice about it, yeah. Mm.
And the situation for you, you're making your way across to the southern part of Crete.
That's right, yeah.
Well, let's talk about what was to happen for you next.
Well, When we finally caught up with some members of my unit, we gradually accumulated and we reassembled. We were quite well organised at the finish over the last less 18 hours or so. We were quite well organised, and we holed up above, up in the hill above the the embarkation point, and then they let us down into the embarkation point in groups, and they had us all lined up, and this is after dark, and then group by group we went aboard the LST and went up in beside the Phoebe, and we went up the ropes on the Phoebe, and away we went.
You
know.
You had contact with Germans at this point in relation to your crossing?
This mate and I, we saw them and they saw us, but nothing eventuated. I think it was sort of mutual respect. They saw us and didn't know how many people there were there, you know. And we weren't interested in engaging them anyway, so we faded into the gully and up and over the hill again. And they formed a line of the infantry gradually filtered through, and they formed a line of resistance there, and that's where the up in the top of the hills, and they held them the rest of the Germans up as they came through. They held them up until they give everybody a chance to evacuate, you know. And of course, when we got going, we had the Australian cruiser, the Perth, with us, and three or four others, and some destroyers. And the Perth got hit right in the cookhouse. It killed a few in the cookhouse, but I think there's a boat called the Kirk Carlisle there too, and it got hit, killed 150 or something on the boat. Of course, it was loaded with troops. Yeah.
What of the situation on board ship? Obviously, you're going to make it across the Mediterranean before you're completely out of.
Yeah, well, the big thing was to try and put as many miles between us and by daylight next morning, you know. Which those ships, although some of them can do 30-odd knots, I mean, even that's not very far with an aircraft chase, like aircraft flying. And especially at that stage, I suppose that they would have quickly got at least one aerodrome working on Crete, so that they would have, you know, been pretty close to the ships that were in on the sea. But then Rommel used his Stukas from the desert to get to them before they got to Alexandria too. You know, that there was hardly a ship in that whole convoy that didn't receive some sort of damage. You know, that's everybody copped a bit of it. The boat I was on, the Phoebe, which was a Ack-Ack cruiser and very, very fast, it didn't get hit or anything, but when we got on board, the sailors, the Pommy sailors, were great. They had cups of cocoa, and which we really appreciated. You know, the last 24 hours, in the last 12 hours in Crete, to me was the worst part of my time in the army. Anyway, just bloody getting chased around like mangy dogs instead of getting up and getting stuck into them. But there wasn't a point. It was a matter of survival, you know. No good of going there and getting yourself knocked off for no reason at all. Yeah, so...
How long did the trip take for you to get back to?
Oh, you know me down there now. It didn't seem very long. It's not very far, is it?
What was it like to get back?
Oh, it was bloody wonderful getting to Alexandria. And the funny thing about it was that when we landed, the 2nd 9th Field Regiment was our people that looked after us, and I had four or five people that I was in the 18th Field Brigade Militia. The first fellow that I saw were these Jagger McGlynn and a couple of other people, you know, that I was actually in the militia with before the war. And they were the 1st Australian Medium Regiment, 2nd 9th Mench Regiment.
Presumably you were to hear that there had been a lot of people that surrendered. How is that to affect the chaps?
Well, they're all, you know, all mates. They've been mates for, you know, 2 years by then, and it was really a sad thing, you know. And you feel guilty that they got knocked off and you didn't. But it doesn't take long for a soldier, in my opinion. Once he starts regrouping and retraining and that sort of thing, he soon comes back to tours, you know.
How long was your time off before you were to get back into training?
Oh, we went to a place called Kassa in Palestine, and got all the camp ready, and then the reinforcements start to arrive, and training started almost immediately. You know, it didn't take very long before the regiment was ready for action again, but then it took a long time before it got back into action again, you know.
What was your training to involve?
Well, it starts off basic, you know, route marches. You go right back to basics again, and then you start your gunnery training, and everybody that had special jobs trained on them, artillery board and all that sort of thing, you know. Just you start off, because the reinforcements, although they're trained as artillerymen, they've got to fit into the crews and be trained as a crew, you know. And that's the biggest thing in artillery. All the crews, they become the sort of they're a team, and they stick together, they live together, they work together, they fight together, and they're never 5 minutes or never a foot away from one another, actually, in the actual gun crews themselves, you know.
What is the situation in relation to morale now? You're on a side that isn't doing particularly well. The Germans have pushed you off Europe, they pushed you off the soft underbelly of Europe. Rommel's advancing in the desert. What's going on?
Yeah, and the Japs are starting to muck up. Yeah, well, you're sort of between the devil and the deep blue sea. You don't know what job they're going to give you, for starters. You don't know, you hear that the Churchill wants the Australian divisions to stay there, and he'll fix the Japs after he's cleaned up the Germans. But a lot of us weren't too wrapped in that situation. There was a lot of controversy about whether we should go back or we shouldn't go back, you know. A lot of us felt that the situation in the Middle East had got to the part where it could be handled without us, and we'd be better off if we were in our own country, you know. But then we come back to Australia and languished here for months and months in northern Queensland. And
have you heard of places like Tobruk? And obviously there was your experience of Tobruk,
yeah,
prior to going to Greece, but had you heard about how Tobruk was holding out?
Yes, we did. We got a fair bit of information on that, yeah, that the I think it was the 7th Dippy was doing a great job up there, you know. Rommel couldn't get into them, and Utley reorganised and then come down again, and of course he overrun them the third time.
Syria looking a little bit positive in June with the Syrian campaign against the Vichy French.
We packed up all the trucks ready to roll at 0600 in the morning, and in the finish, there's only as told to stand down. Everything was packed up, guns, ammo, the whole lot, and only a small contingent went up there to, because they knocked the French off that quick, it wasn't even funny. But our fellas went up to a place in called Homs, up in the mountain. They bloody near froze to death. They had to put Nissen huts up there for them to, you know, unbelievably cold up in those areas. I didn't go myself, but there would have been 40 or 50 of the regiment that went to Homs in that time with the Vichy French, you know.
What have you heard of the German invasion of Russia?
Oh, well, we all kept pretty well up on that, you know. Yeah, we used to get the BBC News, and we had big snooper sets by then, big wireless sets, and we could almost hear anything we wanted to, you know. Matter of fact, up in New Guinea, we sent one of our snooper sets in to Itachi so that he could ring up Singapore to get permission to surrender, because he'd run out of batteries and everything for his gear, and he wouldn't surrender unless he got some permission from somebody higher up. Otherwise, he would have had to commit hari kari, you know. So once he got permission from the next one up, he surrendered, and that was it.
What was the feeling to know that the Germans had now gone off to Russia?
I don't think that anybody with any feeling at all could possibly condone the, even though they were Germans, of the things that happened on the Russian front. And I don't only mean the Germans either, you know, some of Hitler's suicidal business about no retreat. I mean, I've seen photos of whole gun crews just sitting on big guns, sitting on in their positions, dead, frozen to death. So that's how good they were. They stayed there and died, you know, and that just wasn't one of them. There was hundreds of thousands of them. But, you know, it makes you wonder why human beings ever get permission to do what they want to do. Yeah.
In relation to the Germans' initial invasion of Russia, this wouldn't happen for some time, but your initial impressions at the time of the Germans' decision to go and fight Russia?
Well,
they've been allies.
But those that thought about it always thought about Napoleon, you know. The modern-day generals made exactly the same mistake as Napoleon done, and attacked in the autumn and got trapped in wintertime, you know. So, I mean, that was ludicrous, really. But one of the things that they said to us that made us, to make us feel a little bit better, they said that was our campaign in Greece, that Hitler was ready to go into Russia 3 months earlier, ready to go. And when the invasion of Greece happened, he deferred quite a substantial number of elite troops to go down there and delayed his entry into Russia, and they reckon that through that's why he got caught in the Russian winter. That if he had gone when he was supposed to go, in the spring, the result from the Russian invasion would have been entirely different, because he would have overrun the country. But the delay by sending Wantley clean the Greek bit up, that just delayed him long enough to make another Napoleonic mistake. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned your views on the Greek campaign. Were those comments, did they help to alleviate your thoughts of the campaign?
Oh, I think they did, yeah. I think one of the biggest things is, when you're a soldier, you do what you're told, but it helps if you know why you're doing it and how, and the reason for it, you know. That's one of the things that we all thought a lot of our CO, was that he always kept you informed. Whatever happened, this might happen or that might happen, and we think that this will happen. That's, you know, our next position will be so-and-so. And we were all part of the picture, and we all knew there was no rabble at any time, you know. It just, everything was precise. We're moving back to a certain position, and the gun positions officer go there, resurvey it, that's where they went to. And there was, organisation was absolutely perfect, yeah. So we had nothing to complain about in that way, you know. Everybody in the unit done what they were supposed to do to fulfil their job, and that's all it was, a job, you know. We didn't do it, bad luck, it's a shame.